It's Wednesday, November 4th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. And continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. We're still catching up on all the election results from last night, and kind of a mixed bag here. We're happy to see that Breckenridge, Colorado, passed its decriminalization ordinance by over 70% to allow adults to possess up to 1 ounce of marijuana. We're a little sad to see the defeat of Governor John Corzine in New Jersey, who promised he would sign any medical marijuana legislation that came across his desk. We'll have to hold his successor, Republican Chris Christie, to his promises to take a look at medical marijuana. And I'm most perplexed about the state of Maine, which on the same ballot approved medical marijuana dispensaries and an ID registration program and expanding the list of conditions for medical marijuana in the state, but on the same ballot took away the right of gay couples to get legally married. I don't want to get too much into the issue, but it seems a little strange to me that Mainers would support an AIDS patient being able to get medical marijuana at a dispensary, but wouldn't support him marrying his boyfriend so they could visit each other in the hospital. Just my opinion. We've got some new photos up on the web from the Halloween parties this last weekend. Friday night was at the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation's party here in Portland, and Saturday night was right here at Normal West Coast Media Headquarters. Check them out at stash.normal.org. We've also got an announcement from Los Angeles Normal, where Lou Dog from the Cottonmouth Kings has been appointed the assistant director of Los Angeles Normal. You can hear from Lou Dog as he appeared on the panel at the Cypress Hill Smokeout with Tommy Chong and Be Real. It's all contained on our October 26th episode of the Daily Audio Stash. And right here in Portland, we're getting a ton of media hits from the local media for Oregon Normal's Cannabis Cafe that's opening on November, Friday the 13th. All of the local news stations have been calling Madeline Martinez for comment. A few of them have called me, and it's just all over the airwaves. Today, Lars Larson, the conservative commentator, was on the radio blasting the idea, so we'll keep up on it for you here in Portland and give you all the news as it breaks.
I don't care. It's 420 somewhere.
Let's take a look now at our cannabis community calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Tomorrow night, Thursday, November 5th, Joplin Normal is having a movie night, and they are featuring the show The Union, The Business Behind Getting High. Also, Philly Normal is having their open meeting at the A Space at 4722 Baltimore Avenue. And Oberlin College Normal in Ohio is having their weekly meeting on Thursday night. Saturday night, the Fall 2009 Missouri Normal Conference begins. This will be at the MU campus in the Ellis Library Auditorium, happening all day, featuring special guests Dan Vietz, Sean Randall, Kelly Maddy, and Normal's Deputy Director, Paul Armentano. We'll have Sean Randall on the show on Friday, most likely, to discuss this upcoming conference for the Show Me State. Also, Michigan Normal is having their fourth quarter statewide meeting for all of Michigan Normal subchapters. That'll be happening on Saturday morning. And next Monday, November 9th, Kansas City Normal is having their meeting at 4010 Pennsylvania Avenue in Kansas City, Missouri. Also next week, starting on November 10th and lasting through Saturday, November 14th, I'll be in Albuquerque, New Mexico at the Drug Policy Alliance's International Drug Policy Reform Conference. I'll be presenting a panel on cannabis and culture, and also giving a presentation privately to DPA's staff about marijuana legalization. For more information on all of these events, check out our calendar at normal.org/calendar. And if you'd like your events on the cannabis community calendar, send me an email at stash@normal.org. Are you good? It's a normal shout-out. Our shout-out today goes out to all the folks who've applied to be volunteer music editors for the Daily Audio Stash. As we go on and produce a new set of Daily Toker tunes, I've decided that we should break it down by musical genres, somewhat like what we were doing with the Marijuana Music Awards. Coming up after November 16th, we're going to have Roots Monday. That'll be blues, country, folk, and jazz. Electric Tuesday, which will be dance, trance, house, electronica. Irie Wednesday, which will be reggae, ska, dancehall, and reggaeton. Groovin' Thursday, featuring rap, hip-hop, R&B, and funk. And Rockin' Friday, featuring rock, metal, punk, and jam bands. I've also got the idea that I'd like to have a different musical editor for each one of those days. So that does two things. It provides five different positions for people to volunteer to help us out here at the Stash, and it allows those editors to concentrate on one particular musical genre. Also, it means less work, only having to come up with one song per week among five people, than one person coming up with five songs every week. Like I said earlier, we've got seven people who've applied for this gig. If you'd like to get involved and become a musical editor for the Daily Audio Stash, send me an email at stash@normal.org with the subject musical editor. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we begin with your hemp headlines, including a new study showing the promise of cannabinoids in treating post-traumatic stress disorder. We have a article from change.org that calls us out about the pot and safe driving myth. I'll give you my thoughts on that idea. And a new push by the states to allow higher potency beer is reported in the USA Today. For our Daily Toker Tunes today, I'm going to bring you a hip-hop song that I found on GarageBand.com. It's called Medical Marijuana by a band called Medical Marijuana. Kind of like Bad Company's Bad Company. And for our interview today, it is Wednesday, so we're going to give you your dose of cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who, apropos of one of our headlines, will be talking about cannabis and driving. All that and more coming up on your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Cannabinoids show promise in treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder. I have about a half dozen Vietnam vets as friends who would tell you no shit, but it's always good to get the official science on our side. From Newswise, use of cannabinoids could assist in the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder patients. This is exposed in a recent study carried out at the Learning and Memory Lab in the University of Haifa's Department of Psychology in Israel. The study, carried out by research assistant Etty Gannon-Elazar under the supervision of Dr. Irit Akarav, was published in the prestigious Journal of Neuroscience, and it aimed to examine the efficiency of cannabinoids as a medical treatment for coping with post-traumatic stress. The researchers used a synthetic form of marijuana, which has similar properties to the natural plant, and they chose to use a rat model, which presents similar physiological responses to stress to that of humans. Dr. Akarav and Gannon-Elazar also examined hormonal changes in the course of the experiment and found that synthetic marijuana prevents increased release of the stress hormone that the body produces in response to stress. According to Dr. Akarav, the results of this study show that cannabinoids can play an important role in stress-related disorders. Quote, "The results of our research should encourage psychiatric investigation into the use of cannabinoids in post-traumatic stress patients," end quote, she concludes. I agree with Willie Nelson when he says, quote, "The biggest killer on the planet is stress, and I still think the best medicine is and always has been cannabis," end quote. I think cannabis is good not just for PTSD, but for everyday stress most of us feel from time to time. How much could we reduce road rage, ulcers, and domestic abuse if our hyper-stressed, always-on culture embraced a little more cannabis and a little less caffeine? Rebutting Change.org's Pot and the Safe Driving Myth. From Change.org's Criminal Justice section. Advocates for marijuana reform frequently argue that the drug should be legalized because it's safe. This is generally true, and I support legalization for this and many other reasons. But when it comes to driving and safety, legalization advocates often go a step too far, claiming that driving under the influence of marijuana is not dangerous and that marijuana causes zero deaths each year. These misleading arguments are harming the reform movement. In the next couple of paragraphs, the author calls out to the authors of Marijuana is Safer, so I'll leave that to Paul Armentano to cover. I've never claimed that driving under the influence of marijuana is not dangerous, though I have pointed out how it is safer than driving under the influence of alcohol or driving while text messaging. I'm also increasingly perturbed by a society that thinks nothing of parking lots at bars and .08 BAC laws having zero tolerance for the notion of cannabis-using drivers. The fact that we have a per se standard of .08 BAC for alcohol-using drivers means that at below .08 BAC, the state has to prove you were actually too impaired to drive, not simply that you'd been drinking. We tolerate the idea that a big guy like me, 6 foot 260 pounds, might be able to drink one beer and be okay to drive. But the notion of driving after one puff of a joint is unthinkable. We tolerate people driving their cars to bars for the express purpose of becoming impaired, knowing full well that not 100% of them have designated drivers, but we're supposed to worry that legalizing pot will lead to blood on the highways? So I want to say to the commenters who frequently write here and elsewhere that driving under the influence of marijuana is not risky, you're wrong. Not only are you wrong, but you're spreading a dangerous myth that could cause deadly accidents and will hurt the chances for marijuana reform in the United States. To those who cite that stat that alcohol causes 75,000 deaths each year in the U.S. and marijuana causes zero, you're wrong too. Marijuana causes far, far fewer deaths than alcohol, maybe 0.1%, but the number is not zero. Fatal accidents like this one in Philadelphia and this one in Montana confirm that. It's always funny to me how one or two stories of people being helped by medical marijuana are just anecdotes that don't scientifically prove anything, but one or two stories of a person pleading guilty to a fatal marijuana DUI wreck proves how dangerous marijuana and driving are. The author, I believe, is purposefully excluding the context under which most of us say marijuana never killed anyone. I am always referring to marijuana being non-toxic and incapable of overdose. I try to be careful and only cite the 35,000 alcohol deaths from chronic conditions, like the 18,000 whose livers fail, or the 4,500 who suffer strokes and heart attacks, or the 2,200 who get cancer. I try not to include the 40,000 whose alcohol use causes acute conditions, like the 14,000 who wreck their car, boat, or plane, or the 19,000 who fall, commit suicide, or are murdered, or the 2,200 who freeze, burn, or drown. If we want to include all the ways in which marijuana might lead to the death of its users, then indeed, it is false to say that nobody ever died from marijuana. First, we'd have to add in all the people who've been shot by police, murdered by dealers, or died choking on their own vomit due to lack of medical marijuana in a prison cell. We'd have to include people like the two drivers in the examples above, plus all the people who fell off a cliff because they tripped while stoned, and the people who die of a heart attack from the obesity they got from the munchies. As you admit, that number is still probably 0.1% of the deaths compared to alcohol under all conditions, which is why we are also careful to say marijuana is not harmless, but it is far less harmful than alcohol and tobacco. And I still think that percentage is high, as that would be 75 pot-related deaths per year. To show that we're serious about responsible reform, marijuana reformers need to take a stand against driving under the influence of pot. Each of us can do our part. Fine, I'll take that stand. If your consumption of marijuana has led you to be as impaired as someone with a blood alcohol content of 0.08 or above, do not drive a car. If you're at a public event, wait to drive for as long as they force the beer drinkers to wait before you get behind the wheel.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Not your father's Woodstock booze. States push for higher potency beer. When it comes to marijuana, the popular recreational relaxant that is non-toxic and cannot kill you, its increasing potency is a cause for alarm.
Time Magazine. 25% of BC Bud is made of the psychoactive drug tetrahydrocannabinol, or THC. In contrast, the pot that the hippie generation smoked in the 1970s had only 2% THC content, and most pot consumed in the U.S. today averages about 7% THC. Chicago Tribune. One thing has changed. Pot packs a bigger wallop now than it did in the 70s. Today's leaves are up to 5 times as potent. So, says Nora Volkow, director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse, still developing brains, which are, quote, more plastic, more sensitive to being modified, end quote, are exposed to higher doses of THC, the psychoactive ingredient, in cannabis. ABC News. With stronger pot, emergency rooms have reported more associated accidents. Just this week, 7 people were killed when the driver drove the wrong way on a New York highway and collided head-on with a pickup truck. Although the driver's family has disputed the results, toxicology tests showed high levels of alcohol and marijuana. New York Times, quote, "It's like drinking beer versus drinking whiskey," said Dr. Nora D. Volkow, director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse, a government agency and a strong opponent of legalizing marijuana. "If you have access to whiskey, your risk is going to be higher for addiction. Now that people have access to very high-potency marijuana, the game is different," end quote. Oklahoma Bureau of Narcotics. "The new marijuana in the marketplace is not the 1% to 2% THC, which is the psychoactive ingredient that produces the high. Today's new cultivation methods are producing a drug with up to 30% THC, or 3,000% higher than the old 1960s through 1980s available marijuana."
But if it's alcohol, a popular recreational intoxicant that is toxic and can kill you, its increasing potency is a victory for connoisseurs and retailers. From the USA Today. A growing number of states are moving to allow higher alcohol content in beer, despite concerns from some substance abuse experts. Alabama and West Virginia have passed laws increasing the legal alcohol by volume cap for beer from 6% to as high as 13.9% this year. Similar efforts are underway in Iowa and Mississippi, two states with very restrictive limits on the sale of high alcohol beer, said Sean Wilson, former president of Pop the Cap, North Carolina's successful grassroots effort that raised the state's limit in 2005. Vermont raised the cap to 16% and Montana to 14% last year. The average alcohol content in beer is 4.65% and in wine 11.45%, according to a 2002 study by the Alcohol Research Group in Emeryville, California. 20 states still place some kind of limit on the amount of alcohol in beer, Wilson said. Paul Gatza, director of the National Brewers Association based in Boulder, Colorado, said limiting alcohol content restricts flavors and styles because, quote, you can't put as much malt or other sugars in your beer as you may want to, end quote. Gatza said consumers of specialty or microbrewed beers, also known as craft beers, quote, don't drink to get drunk. They drink to appreciate the flavors, end quote. Right, and I smoke pot because I appreciate the scents. This is a theme that goes back to the days of Nixon. The idea that people don't drink to get drunk, they do it to socialize. But pot smokers are only smoking weed to get high. Tell you what, next time there's a cocktail party, swap out all the beer for O'Doul's, all the wine with grape juice, and all the cocktails with soft drinks, and let's see how much the alcohol drinkers can socialize without getting a buzz on. The reason alcohol drinkers can make this absurd statement is because they differentiate between the socializing, or getting a buzz on, and the getting drunk, or alcohol poisoning. They don't conceive of a similar state for marijuana consumption. In their mind, there's not smoking pot, and there's stoned out of your mind, with no intermediate step. This is often because marijuana is illegal, so people who may have experimented a time or two did so under conditions that required smoking it all and smoking it quickly. They've never experienced an Amsterdam-like nice mellow joint followed by a productive day. So an increase in cannabis potency, to them, means the pot that used to get them stoned out of your mind will now get their kids way stoned out of your mind. Meanwhile, having worked for 15 years in bars every weekend, bars with parking lots full of cars that I can guarantee weren't all driven by designated drivers, I can tell you that consumers of microbrews are doing it to get drunk. The guy who is pounding 4% beers at $2 a glass will be more than happy to pound 16% beers at $5 a glass, knowing that his $20 in beer money may only get him 4 microbrews compared to 10 tap beers, but he can get drunker, quicker, and take fewer pee breaks for the effort, and the beer tastes better. Isn't it amazing? Here we have a drug that we know kills 35,000 people a year directly from ingestion and another 40,000 due to its effects, a drug that has proven to cause serious harm to every organ in the body, a drug at the heart of a vast majority of domestic abuse cases, crimes, and assaults, and not only are states deciding to allow it to be up to 4 times more potent, but the marketers of the drug are boasting that it also tastes better and the increased potency doesn't matter. But marijuana, that kills no one, is non-toxic to cells and organs, and brings people together in peace and communion, when that becomes up to 4 times more potent,
it is a serious cause for alarm.
I guess we better not tell them that the marijuana tastes better these days, too.
Dear Mr. President, last November you were elected on a platform of change. You promised the country reform on the political system. Well, let me tell you what Normal.org and many other Americans want changed. Marijuana laws. It was estimated that America made its 20 millionth arrest for marijuana possession this year. You want a real economic problem? How about the amount of money being spent on simple possession arrests? Incarcerating people costs taxpayers around $23,000 per year, and Normal estimates that up to $10 billion a year are spent on enforcement for mostly nonviolent offenders. Now let's imagine what would happen if marijuana was legal. Not only would we save billions each year on enforcement, but imagine the economic boost. You would produce jobs growing, selling, and tax dollars coming in from the regulation of marijuana. I'm not saying let people loose to sell on the streets. Put government regulation into tax and control at sales like alcohol. Street dealers are the problem, not a guy with a gram in his pocket. Put in harsh punishments for people who drive under the influence, and stop punishing people who enjoy marijuana safely in their home. Mr. President, if you really want change, legalize marijuana.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we believe in spreading the growing truth about cannabis. One way we reach out to the cannabis community is through 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who share our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on the Daily Audio Stash, send it to us at music@normal.org. We'll help promote your gigs, recordings, and websites, and maybe even interview you about your musical career. Now, here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. Master G and Sack Daddy Flash, a.k.a. Kevin and Chris, from Glasgow, Kentucky, make up this unlikely hip-hop duo, Medical Marijuana, and their eponymous tune featured today, Medical Marijuana. Sack Daddy Flash provides the vocals while Master G provides everything else, which consists of a lot of note-by-note, beat-by-beat programming on, quote, a 400 megahertz computer and a cheap-ass sound card, end quote, with mixed-in samples from Up in Smoke and Soul Train. Their low-tech approach turned out a really enjoyable, old-school-flavored hip-hop groove. Check out Medical Marijuana on GarageBand by visiting our links at stash.normal.org. This is Medical Marijuana with Medical Marijuana.
And now it's time for America's favorite daytime fun show, Let's Make a Dope Deal.
What kind of joint is this, man?
Lots of heavy duty joints, man.
I'm gonna slap my bitch up in here.
Yo, yeah.
Wow, man.
Come on.
Know what time it is.
Come on. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If I had a bag of marijuana.
Man, that's the heaviest shit I ever smoked.
I'm just a poor white boy from the dirty south. Back at the trailer with a joint in my mouth. The balls always sweating, I'm watching my back. But yo, without a search warrant, they can lick my sack.
We're all nervous as hell, and it's hard to relax.
But it's so easy with a 20 sack.
It's a rush to the city when we find some cash. We need a bag of weed and $2 in gas. Pigs go by and we close our eyes. My baby don't need another DUI. All we ever wanted was to just get high. But the motherfuckers act like that's a crime.
If I had a bag of marijuana.
Man, that's the heaviest shit I ever smoked.
Take a vacation. My whole family's on probation. I paid on Tuesday, but that's all gone. And the damn pawn shop won't buy my bong. I think I'm gonna take a vacation. My whole family's on probation. I paid on Tuesday, but that's all gone. And the damn pawn shop won't buy my bong. Rubbing on Gateway Court, trying to find weed or bail. But the motherfucking rap done sang like a bird, and now everybody's in jail. Rubbing on Gateway Court, trying to find weed or bail. But a motherfucking rat done sung like a bird, and now everybody's in jail. Come on.
If I had a bag,
my homegirl LT, to my
marijuana,
Bobby, Larry, Gene, Chris, Shaggy and Doug,
Lone
Ranger.
Heavy shit I ever smoked.
Marijuana.
I have in front of me a green leafy substance, which I am going to light. Now, I wonder, could one of you boys and girls guess what this substance might be?
If I had a bag of marijuana.
Gold.
No, it's Michoacan, man, Michoacan.
Gold.
No, it's Michoacan, man.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com. Who is telling you the truth about marijuana? The government? Scientists? Doctors? Which claims are scientifically valid, and which claims are reefer madness? Every Wednesday, we separate the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Normal's look at cannabis science. Time once again for some more cannabis science with our good friend Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Oh, thanks for having me.
One of the subjects that comes up many times here at the Daily Audio Stash and at Normal in general is the subject of cannabis and driving. I had just recently posted something from, I think it was a law enforcement officer, talking about how marijuana needs to be illegal because they've got no real good ways of detecting whether or not someone was under the influence of cannabis while they're driving. My point, of course, is if you can't tell they're driving poorly, what's the problem? But I thought we'd bring this up with you, and maybe we could discuss how are they currently trying to test for people's impairment while driving under cannabis, and what do you think we ought to do to prevent people from driving under the influence?
This is an intriguing and complicated question, Russ, because we've got this interesting model with alcohol, and everybody kind of wants to apply it. It's great that we have the breathalyzer. The folks who developed that were real geniuses, and it is a pretty good estimate of how much alcohol is in your blood at the time you're actually providing that sample of breath. There is nothing comparable in the cannabis literature, and I also want to emphasize that THC levels, even in the blood, don't correlate very well with actual driving impairment. Particularly when compared to the way alcohol does. So it's clearly a different set of questions, and we have to have a different framework. Now, I've been sad to see how many states have jumped on this idea that we're just going to do a urine screen, and then we'll know if you were impaired at the time of driving. As we've discussed before, the idea that you still have THC metabolites in your urine 2 weeks later makes it clear that this is no way to be able to assess if somebody should or should not have been driving at the time. As we've seen on the Normal website time and again, we don't recommend folks get high and drive, or drive when they're really tired, or drive after taking antihistamines, or drive under any kind of circumstances where it wouldn't be ideal. I think that the move towards more behavioral kinds of measures, the kinds of roadside sobriety tests that we've grown accustomed to with alcohol, is the way to go. Other scientists are going in wild directions. We're going to measure, the sweat under your armpits, the, your tears, things like that. But that can really miss the point given the poor links between THC and impairment. If you honestly cannot do the sort of psychomotor things like walk a straight line and bend over, you don't have to, juggle on a unicycle or anything, but just, do the standard kinds of tests we're accustomed to, it's amazing how well those actually correlate with driving impairment. And then they can be completely independent of drug use. You could be just, too tired to drive, or just not in a good condition to drive for any reason, whether it be intoxication or not. And I'm really eager to see states move to this kind of approach instead of some crazy assessment of what might be in your blood or urine.
Yeah, I think so, somehow, and maybe this is, you know, reflected back into our obsession with drunk driving and alcohol since the MAD era, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, took place. You know, that started when I was, you know, back in high school in the 80s. In that we're more concerned with the content of your body than how you're actually driving. I always find it ironic that we have so much concern over an alleged stone driver when we still have bars that have parking lots. I mean, we know that not all those cars are being driven by designated drivers. I've often proposed that we ought to have only taxi stands and valet parking at bars, and that valet has a breathalyzer. And if you can't pass the breathalyzer, he doesn't give you your keys back. So what do you think as far as cannabis impairment and its effect on driving? I mean, is there as severe effect as alcohol? I mean, probably obviously not, but what are the effects of cannabis on driving?
So Anthony Liguori has a superb chapter on this in my book, Pot Politics, and he points out that, of course, it's very dose-dependent, but generally the impairments are really, really small. As far as, say, braking distance, the tendency to, say, try to pass other cars, of course, does not increase the way it does with alcohol. And then some wonderful data from Roby gathered in Amsterdam itself showed that actually while people are high, they're much less likely to tailgate. They give themselves more time when they do see a stop sign, and they generally tend to compensate for the fact. Where things go awry is if alcohol and cannabis are mixed and people are just completely confused. They just don't know what they're doing in some sense. And there is some small deficits in the ability to just sort of stay right in the center of the lane. And that's, you know, not something that's going to, you know, cause giant pileups necessarily, but it's clear that, you know, folks just aren't at their peak. What I like about his approach too is he's been very candid that we don't know exactly how it all works and that there's incredible variation. So that as odd as it sounds, when some medical users tell me, you know, I can use enough to, you know, keep my nausea at bay and I can still drive fine, they're really telling the truth. It really is the case that people do develop tolerance to these effects over time. So again, sort of saying that a specific THC level is probably not the way to go.
Mm. You know, that reminds me of the case of one of the federal medical marijuana patients, Irv Rosenfeld, who's often photographed or has mentioned that he smokes the federal marijuana joints. Of course, they're pretty low potency joints, but and that he's driving around all the time. We also have, if you look at a bottle of Marinol, you know, the synthetic THC that's allowed by the government, how it has that warning that says, until you know how you may react, don't drive or operate heavy machinery, which says to me that once you do know how you react, go ahead and drive. I mean, would a warning like that be appropriate for something like medical marijuana?
I feel like that would be ideal. And in truth, we should have those things on a lot more of our medications. The opiate painkillers have also been shown to impair a lot of psychomotor tasks that are related to driving. And even over-the-counter antihistamines, you know, 50 milligrams of Benadryl will make you retarded in the car. You shouldn't be driving at all under those circumstances. And I think spreading the word. The other thing that was really superb in the drunk driving public service announcements and general improvements we've had over the years on that is just making it socially acceptable to say, I'm not ready to drive, or even having a friend say, hey, dude, I'll drive you home, or I'll call you a cab, or, you know, spend the night here, or, you know, hang out for a few more hours, you know, so that that's not this taboo, emasculating, weird thing to have happen. And suddenly, under those circumstances, we've been doing a whole lot better in the alcohol literature, and I'm sure that could apply to Benadryl fatigue and any other issue.
Hmm. You know, one of the advantages that we have on the alcohol side, and I've seen this at lots of taverns, is a little chart where they'll show you what your body weight is, and then you cross that to how many drinks you've had, whether it's 12 ounces of beer, 5 ounces of wine, or a shot of liquor. And they'll say, okay, you know, a big guy like me, I'm 260, I could probably have 2 or 3 drinks and still be okay to drive. A little woman who's maybe 100 pounds dripping wet, she can have 1 drink or whatever. Are we saying now that there's probably not a real accurate or good way to do something similar with cannabis? Like, you know, 1 puff and you're okay, but 2 is bad. I mean, we can't really measure that, can we?
Yeah, I mean, given the vast range in THC and in individual tolerance, I would say no, I'd much rather turn to a behavioral thing. Can you stand on 1 foot with the other foot extended out in front of you for 30 seconds without having to flop around like a pelican, then odds are high you're doing okay. If you can't do that, by all means, wait a couple hours, hang out with your buddies, and then drive. You know,
yeah.
It's clearly a more behavioral issue than anything else. I'm eager to see if folks are willing to do these sorts of things, but it's definitely a step in the right direction and better than some kind of odd, you know, if you've got this much train wreck in you, you know, then this is why you shouldn't drive, you know, which I think tends to lend itself to weird misinterpretations and just too much variation.
I think if you smoked anything with the word wreck in it, it's probably, on an irony sense, probably not good to drive. you know, one of the scare stories that we hear from the prohibitionists now, whenever the issue of legalization comes up, is they talk about the mass increase in wrecks because of stone drivers, or the admittance to hospitals, emergency rooms where they test the people who've been in wrecks, and, you know, a large percentage of them come up positive for marijuana. What's behind these kind of studies, and is it something that that marijuana smokers really need to fear?
Paul Armentano's done a great job of looking at this literature recently, and he points out that a lot of these studies are completely useless because they rely on the urine screens, and so it doesn't say if anybody was actually intoxicated at the time. The key for regular adult users is simply having some kind of behavioral assessment before you get in the car, but also planning ahead. If you know you're going to go somewhere and you know you're going to want to enjoy, then by all means, time things so that you have a sufficient number of hours after use so that you wouldn't have any kind of psychomotor impairment by the time it's time to drive home. And then suddenly this little bit of planning ahead makes it no longer really an issue.
I always say, you know, go to the party, and if you're in a city type area, after the party, walk down the street to the cafe, sit down, have some breakfast, get some munchies in you, take some time, and then later it'll be time to drive. Of course, that might not be a perfect solution for folks out in the rural areas, but you can cook your own. The munchies are always good after a little bit of a party, and it does give you that time to help recover. Before we let you go, Doctor, is there any other advice you'd like to give people with regards to cannabis, driving, or any of the reefer madness they may have heard about it?
I think the key on this is, as responsible users take this seriously, we can send the message to prohibitionists that just as we can trust people to use alcohol in their adult lives, we can do the same here, because in fact this is markedly less impairing when you compare the two. And that if you want to have really strict, outrageous penalties for impaired driving, by all means, we're willing to have that be the case too. We don't want to see folks driving impaired either. So let's work together and have this the way you'd like it to be.
Yeah, exactly. And the test for impairment needs to be something more than just the possession of marijuana or the inert metabolites in one system, definitely. Dr. Mitch Earlywine joins us every Wednesday for our cannabis science segment from the State University of New York at Albany. And if you've got questions you'd like to have answered on this segment, you can send them in to 420research@gmail.com, or just send them to me at stash@normal.org, and we'll see that your questions get answered. Thanks, Dr. Mitch, for joining us again, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a reminder to check out the blog at stash.normal.org, where we've got plenty more stories we don't have time to get to here on the Stash, including the latest rebuttal from David Nutt, the UK drugs advisor, who was sacked for being honest about marijuana being safer than alcohol, and a great news story on our college chapter at the University of Maryland, the Normal Terps, they call themselves, getting active there in the state. They were featured in the alt-weekly, the Baltimore Bee. If you've got news stories on any of our Normal chapters, please send them to me at stash@normal.org so we can get them publicized here on the podcast. Coming up on tomorrow's podcast, we're going to be speaking with Laura Creo from the Cannabis Therapy Institute in Colorado to give us the lowdown on what's happening there with their medical marijuana law. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.